Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. We have a couple more folks coming in. Please sign in, or if you've pre-registered, go ahead and just check your information and have a seat. My name is Trier Cole. I'm an associate regional planner here at Fresno COG. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this afternoon. We hope that this session will be one of, or the first of many. I just want to say a quick thank you to our moderator for the day, Rob Terry, and all of our speakers who have graciously agreed to come and share their expertise with us. So we have a really full agenda. We're going to go ahead and get started, and let me first introduce Tony Bourne, our executive director.
Thank you, Tri. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Fresno COG. I know for a lot of you, this is probably the first time you've been here. I see a lot of new faces, but glad to have you. I think this is a very exciting topic. I think when you look at it in the context of what growth looks like for Fresno County and the Valley as a whole, right? So over the next 20, 25 years, we're going to add maybe 300,000 people here in Fresno County alone. The Valley, probably, you know, we're at 4 million now. It's probably going to be north of 5 million, give or take. So we need to think of what that means when we have all these people living here in this valley. And I think EV is going to play a big role in that. So I applaud everyone for taking the time to come and join us and kick this thing off. So I'll, you want me to start the introductions right now, Tri? Or?
Braden's going to go ahead.
Oh, Braden's going to do it. Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Braden Duran, and I'm an assistant planner here at Fresno COG working with Tri on this EV workshop. I do want to go over a quick few logistical items before we get going. First off, bathrooms are located out the doors and to the right down the hallway. They are locked, so you will need a key. The keys are in the back by the tables under the sign that says bathroom keys. In case of an emergency and we do need to leave the building, please just follow the above illuminated exit signs to the nearest stairway and we'll go outside of the building if we need to. If you parked on any level of the parking garage below us, we can get your parking validated. We do have a stamp that we can get you all, you can get your ticket stamped by us. This workshop is being recorded, so we ask all the speakers to make sure we're speaking into the mics and that the green light is on in front of you when we do questions when we speak. Also, if we're questions, we're going to use Slido. If any of you have ever used it before, it's a really cool interactive questioning platform. So what we need to do is, if you have a phone or a computer out, go to slido.com and enter the code. It's going to be U936 for today's workshop. And this is just going to allow you to submit questions electronically. And we do have our moderator for the day, Rob Terry, who will be in charge of administering and asking those questions. We do have a break scheduled in between the second and third panels, hopefully around 3:15. And we do aim to end around 4:30. It might be a little bit thereafter, but we're hoping that you could stick around the whole time. And so with that, I will go ahead and do our introduction for our moderator. Rob is the Community Development Director of the City of Reedley. And as an undergraduate, he attended Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, majoring in city and regional planning. He does have a master's in public administration from Troy University. He does own an EV and is an advocate for sustainable planning infrastructure. So with that, I will turn it over to him.
Thank you very much, Braden. Appreciate it. Pleasure to be here today. Worked at Fresno COG for a lot of years, and so in a lot of ways it feels like coming home, in all honesty. So it's I'm just grateful to be here today with a bunch of good friends and a bunch of great panelists and to talk about a topic that I not only have a professional interest in, but also a personal interest in as well as an EV driver. I can tell you, having traveled through various parts of Europe over this summer, there are certainly parts of the world that are much more advanced in their implementation than what we're seeing, particularly here in Central California. And so really grateful for the opportunity to talk about some of the opportunities and challenges and how we can address that and hopefully be able to continually improve upon that. We do have a lot to get through today, so we want to make sure that we're going to cover all the information that is necessary and is relevant to this topic. The workshop itself is going to be split into three panels, as was previously discussed, and then we're going to do Q&A at some question and answer at the end of each one of those individual panels. There is a microphone that COG staff will have to be able to pass around as needed. And also, if you keep your look, your eyes during the presentation for those panelists right over here to Santosh, he will have a timer in the front row. You are supposed to look for the various warnings. There we go, 2 minutes. And then the red happy face to keep things positive but on track. That means you're out of time, so please wrap it up at that point. So I'll get started with the introduction of our first panel of speakers here. And panel one is siting consideration and charging equipment. This is what you need to know. What we're going to talk about here are really factors to consider when you're selecting a site for EV charging, the types of chargers that are available, and how you know you're choosing the right one, and the way that you need to address the various items there. So we have three panelists. I'm going to start introducing. I'm going to introduce all three of them and give a quick bio on them at the same time, and then we will have them step up to the podium one at a time and deliver their items and then go into our Q&A. So first, we have Mr. Steve Hall. Steve is a licensed electrical engineer at AECOM. He's serving as the electrification infrastructure lead in the smart energy market sector, with 15 years of experience designing large-scale electrical infrastructure projects for a wide range of private and municipal clients. Steve is focused on innovation and technology driving the future of transportation, and he's joining us today from Chicago, correct? So I'm a Raider fan. It hurts me to say go Bears, but Khalil Mack is still alive in me. And Ann Camperson is our second one. Ann is the onboarding specialist for PG&E's EV fleet program, dedicated to both government and the cities and county segments. Ann's role is to assist customers interested in purchasing electric, medium, heavy-duty fleet vehicles with building out their electrical infrastructure for charging. Ann has been employed with PG&E for over 11 years and is an expert in qualifying customers for participation in PG&E programs. Thank you, Ann. Moses Stites is the extremely well-known, very successful general manager of the Fresno County Rural Transit Agency, commonly referred to as FCRTA. He oversees the administration and operations of both fixed route and demand response services for the 13 incorporated cities and 29 incorporated communities in Fresno County, with a fleet of 110 vehicles and an annual budget of in between $9 and $10 million. Since his time with FCRTA, he and his staff have succeeded in replacing over 50% of their fleet with alternative fuel vehicles, with a goal of 100% fleet of zero emission by 2025. It's been a great thing to witness and to be a part of there. We're extremely grateful, I know, at the City of Reedley for your efforts, Moses. So with that said, we'll start with Steve, who will step up to the podium first. And Steve, look forward to your stuff. Steve will deliver a message of about 20 minutes, and keep your eyes right over there for that red smiley face. Thank you.
All right, thanks, everyone. Excited to be here today to talk about this. It's an exciting topic that we're obviously seeing a lot of, as I think a lot of the people in the room know. So we're going to go through and talk about a few things today. I tried to organize this in a somewhat logical fashion. So obviously we already have the introduction of me. I'm going to give a brief AECOM overview. I won't spend a lot of time on that. But then the second thing we'll talk about is the technology options, and that is literally going to go through the current charging infrastructure options available. The next piece will be location considerations that are specifically around the siting conditions at a particular spot. Then we'll go through some of the community goals, and then hopefully in number five there, we'll bring it all together for some implementation. So just a quick couple things on AECOM here. I know a lot of people aren't necessarily familiar with who we are. We are a very large company. I'm one of 87,000 employees. We do about $20 billion a year in revenue. But although we're large, we have a lot of offices spread out. We have one here in Fresno that I believe has 22 people, largely focused in the water sector, but as well as some transportation folks as well. We're set up across four basic groups here. I'm in the design and consulting services. We also have construction services, and one thing I will point out here is that AECOM Capital, we do have a group that will self-fund P3s and stuff like that, and charging infrastructure is actually one that, you know, we're starting to see them have a big focus on. Kind of across the board here, the ones that I'll point out are energy and transportation. It's that convergence of energy and transportation that I think is bringing us all here together today to talk about how to best work across those business lines and make a better world for everyone. And then I specifically sit in the energy business line. It's a lot of stuff going on here, but the vehicle electrification readiness planning is where I spend a lot of my day-to-day activities. Okay, so with that part done, what's bringing us here today is electric vehicles. And I think everybody in the room knows this, but you know, it's projected that by 2030 there's going to be 120 million electric vehicles on the road. That's a big, big number. Currently, they're going to be replacing vehicles that recharge this way. Everyone knows you drive up to a gas station, and that's what happens. That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head. So just to kind of set everyone before we get into the charging technology discussion, you know, the energy density of gasoline is about 33 kWh per gallon. Internal combustion engine is about 30% efficient. You can pump gas at about 10 gallons per minute. You extend that math out, it's an effective charge rate of about 6 megawatt hours, or megawatts. For those who aren't familiar, that's a ton of power. That's massive. It's acres and acres of solar arrays, or it's big natural gas generators, whatever the case may be. It's not a viable solution. So what that means is that we need to fundamentally change some of our charging behaviors. So with that said, we're going to go through the technology options. So obviously, each EV has a charger, and its capacity and ability to accept charge rate influences its charging speed. The one everyone kind of is familiar with, you know, at a basic level is, you know, the level one, and that is literally just what you can plug into any receptacle at your house, in your garage, anything like that. Level two is a little bit higher, and that's what we see currently. DOE forecasts that I think about 92% of all charging will be level two chargers right now. And then finally, DC fast charge, again, higher. And I'll go through some of the specifics for each of these as we go. And then another thing that we're seeing come up pretty frequently is wireless charging. I've separated this into a couple different flavors: light duty, static wireless, and then heavy duty static for buses or, you know, large transit fleets, things like that. And then finally, dynamic wireless charging. This is emerging technology that literally allows your vehicle to drive at highway speeds as you pass over coils in the road. All right, so to get into sort of the nuts and bolts of it here, here's the six that I just went through. And I know there's a lot of info on this, but level one, if you park it for 8 hours, say at work or whatever, you only add about 40 miles of range. Now, for most people, that is really not going to be a great alternative. People, you know, range anxiety is a real thing. I think a lot of people know that. So 40 miles of range in 8 hours is not something that's going to be viable for a lot of people. When you get up to level two, this requires essentially like the dryer plug or, you know, something that you're familiar with in your house. And here you can get about 180 miles of charge in those same 8 hours. Going to DC fast, this is up to 50 kW. This requires a much larger utility connection or service available. And generally, we'd say that you can get your battery back to 80% of charge in 30 minutes. This is where we start to see some viability for people that want to charge the same way that they go to a gas station. For static light duty, this effectively can be considered like a level two charger. Generally up to 11 or 22 kW, so you get that same 180 miles in an 8 hour charge. I mentioned this briefly, and I think some folks here may have some follow up questions on it, but on the static wireless heavy duty, 250 kW chargers are commercially available in the marketplace today. There's a lot of installations of bus fleets that can charge wirelessly at 250 kW. And I mention that along with the dynamic because those are technologies that we see could also be used with light duty or passenger fleets. So they still are part of the public charging domain that we want to, you know, consider as we move forward. So then with that sort of menu of charging options, like we said in the introduction, how do you decide which one? What are the needs? What are the charge rates? And so just some of the considerations to consider there is really going to be the utility impacts. And I think Anne will probably speak to those or others in the panel as well. So that's really kind of the big takeaway that you want to follow on some of those is that as you increase in charge rate, you increase in utility requirements, and you increase in cost and possibly pretty substantially and quickly thereof. All right, so now I want to transition a little bit to the location considerations. We know what charging types are available now, but where should we put them? Obvious places are curbside, garages, maybe where your fleet vehicles park, public parking lots, and then commuter corridors, places where we expect vehicles to be for a long duration, possibly. And then what's the parking behavior at each of those locations? Dwell times and space turnover are a huge deal. Workplace charging is obviously people drive to work, and then they're going to be there for 8 hours. So understanding where those are and what those use types are is very important. And first phase, target EV drivers, right? I mean, driving further adoption and acceptance of EVs is the goal here. And the best way to start is to engage the current EV people. As our moderator said, he has an EV. These are things that he has, decisions about every day possibly and where he's going to go or how he's going to use his vehicle. So engaging those folks early on, as well as possible EV adopters, and getting that input and understanding what really drives them is sort of critical. And finally, deployment areas. We recommend a cluster-based approach. You want to obviously put them where the people are going to use them. That seems like common sense, but be surprised that's not always kind of how it goes, right? So the five things I want to talk about quickly here, the one that I really like is hospitals and municipal workers, and I touch on that only because for workplace charging, hospitals have a great diversity of when people are coming to and from work. The nurses may work 12-hour shifts 3 days a week. The janitorial staff may work 7 to 4. The doctors may be there for 2 or 3 days. So the arrival and departure of people with EVs really staggered a lot better than, say, a place where everyone shows up to work at 8:30 and plugs in their car. So, you know, some of those considerations are things that people really should start thinking about as we, you know, bring some of these things together. Another location specific is street side charging. It's kind of maybe hard to see. I think you guys can see it. It says most EV ports are situated on the driver's side. It's about 68% of current EV models available have the charging port on the driver's side, but there's really not a lot of consistency. So in the top picture there, you see a one-way street with parallel parking. If you put the chargers on the left side there, that'll work for about 68% of the vehicles on the road, but that other 32, no dice, right? So you go to 45-degree angle parking, and you see the green dot that represents a charger that the person can decide to park on the left or right side based on where their charging port is. I was walking here from my hotel, and I think it's down M Street. That's an interesting example because it's a one-way street with parallel parking on the right side and 45-degree angle parking on the left side. So, you know, just taking that as one example of how and where do you want to site these things, you know, those are the great things to sort of start thinking about for how people will use them. And finally, visibility. There's been a handful of studies that even if the charging's there, if people don't know it's there, they're not going to use it. So good signage, high visibility, have resources available on your website or some way to push this information out, whether it be through social media or an app or, you know, whatever you think the best way to engage your community is, you have to make sure that they know it's there and available to use. And then this is just sort of the strong catch-all of other considerations here. Lighting and safety, strong cellular signal. One of the things that I think will probably come up later today is people aren't giving away this charging for free, right? So there's got to be a mechanism to charge people for it. So that's where the cellular signal comes in. And then finally just, you know, available land use and understanding each use case. So moving on to the local goals here. So now we know what the charging types are, and we know a couple specific things about how do you actually put them on the street or in a parking garage or those considerations. Why do cities or local governments generally want EV adoption? Well, to either meet their own sustainability goals, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, increased air quality for its residents. We see different reasons all over on why people want to do it. We've got to understand in each individual location what are the drivers that you're hoping to see as a success in your EV program. So some of the community considerations are equitable planning, making sure that it's available to everyone. In certain places where we see a higher EV adoption rate, because those people have access to EV charging and they're possibly wealthier residents that are the adopters, but we have to make sure that EV charging is available to everybody in a community. We also want to minimize disruption and maintain sight lines, parks, landmarks. All these things are very important, and you know, we can't just go sort of plopping down EV stuff anywhere we want. So we need to kind of, you know, do that strategically. So how do we do that? We advocate a GIS-based model where you can essentially identify what's important to you, identify those workplaces that maybe have a high adoption rate, those neighborhoods that may have a high adoption rate, and possibly those neighborhoods where if we put some EV charging, will further drive that adoption. And so how we do that is we collect as much available data as we have, turn that all into a GIS map, meet with the local government or the agency or whoever is driving this, and then build essentially a priority matrix of why do you want to do this and what issues are important to you. And what we can do there is we can model it a few different ways. So the first way is to just maximize EV charging utilization. Essentially, I only want to put the chargers where they're going to be used the most. Pardon me. So represented in blue here is where the high priority rates, essentially you can think of this as like a heat map around where do we think the best deployment of chargers will be, strictly based on utilization. I tried to put these side by side, but it didn't really work. So the second version of this is how do we deploy EV assets in an equitable fashion throughout the community? And what you see here is a big shrinking of the blue and some of the greens turn to yellows and things like that. This is obviously very generic. You know, this was for a community on the East Coast. We stripped out a lot of the data here. But you can present this to your stakeholders, to people that are interested, and really make some good decisions around how do you deploy these assets. And then finally is the balance, right? Life's all about balance. If you're going to pay for chargers, you want them to be used. The utility wants you to use them. The infrastructure is there for a reason. So you can modify these layers to help address some of those inequities possibly in charging while still getting a mix of high EV usage at those locations. Some of those layers, I wanted to put this first, but land use, income, population, pollution, right? Obviously, in some of these areas, if air quality is one of the issues you want to address, you can pull data on asthma rates in a particular area. You can identify those sort of health and equity issues as well to turn on or off your priorities essentially to, you know, drive your goals. And then so the final takeaways here, everyone has charging needs. We see that. We saw it on the first slide. Electrification's here. The vehicles are coming. And so how do you best address that within your community to, you know, really get them to use the charging stations? And with that, I believe I will take questions.
Actually, we're gonna hold some questions.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's right.
Slingo. But thank you very much, Steve. Appreciate it. Next, we're going to have the opportunity here from Ann. Our presentation will be about 10 minutes long, and as she's stepping up and they're getting everything ready there, I thought that Tony had asked a great question about how many EVs were on the road today, and so I was looking that up. There's approximately 350,000 that are registered on the road, zero-emission vehicles, in the state of California today, and then the U.S. DOT anticipates, or estimates, excuse me, that there's roughly 1 million throughout the U.S. So, I mean, we're talking California has over a third of the total, so obviously significantly leading the way, and yet the charging infrastructure is certainly not on the leading edge of that as well. So You know, you already have a lot of these items that are on the road right now. What can we do to make sure that we're catching up with that and really addressing it? Obviously, someone like PG&E plays a huge part in that. So, Ann, take it away.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. My name's Ann Camperson, and I'm an onboarding specialist with PG&E's electric vehicle fleet program. I just want to thank TRI and the Fresno Council of Governments for having PG&E today here at the council meeting, and you all for participating and listening in. Thank you. I have about 12 slides. I'm going to go over the infrastructure piece of the program. I'm also on a panel at the end of the day for financing. So I'm going to attach the dollars and the incentives to that presentation at the end of the day. But I can tell you both presentations I have are consolidated into one, and I believe TRI will make that available to you all. And everything I go over in the next 10 minutes is on our website at pge.com/EV fleet. So it's all out there. It's all available. I'm super excited to say our brand new EV fleet program just launched this past summer. We do have three programs, just to not be confused. Electric vehicle programs, PG&E. We have the electric vehicle charge network. That is for light duty cars, for workplace and multi-unit dwellings, basically level two chargers. That program is fully subscribed. That's a nice way to put totally sold out. So we're hoping to refund that. And so if you're interested, you just get on a wait list on our website. We also have the EV fleet program for medium heavy duty fleet vehicles, which I'll be talking about today. And we are also just launching a fast charge program for public fast charging. That program is taking on a few beta customers as we speak. We're hoping someone in Fresno, we might be able to do it with Fresno. But really more towards the end of the year, the beginning of the year, we'll have that DC fast charge program. So for the electric vehicle medium heavy duty fleet, these are the vehicles we're looking for. There's medium, obviously heavy duty. We're specifically looking, if you see on the transit, we're looking at a 15% minimum. And I don't say this as PG&E. This is the CPUC, California Public Utilities Commission. They regulate us. So we have mandates of funding and how many vehicles that fund have to charge. So we're looking at the transit segment, not specifically. We're including all vehicles, anything from a class 2 to class 8. But transit, especially, I know Tri wanted me to mention, there's motivators for transit. There's the CARB mandates. You want to look sustainable, your image. There's VGI. There's all kinds of things, obviously, you can do with transit agencies. And the approach is, since you have a large fleet, if you are a transit fleet owner, is anybody fleet managers out there, by the way? No? Okay, great. You want to start small and maybe do a pilot, see what the other fleet agencies are doing or transit agencies in city and counties. Make it easy for yourself. There's a lot of challenges, obviously, that go with that in decision-making. There's many layers. There's many shareholders, many phases of opportunity where you have to get approved. So, and there's funding, plenty of funding out there for vehicles. So the beauty of this program is we're going to work with your original equipment manufacturers, your OEMs that you decide on for the vehicle, and your charge vendors. And this is for the infrastructure piece. So we all have to work together, really understand what vehicles you have, what your logistics are for your route mileage, how you would like to charge them, and of course, most importantly, is what kind of load you need. And what kind of load do you need for the future? You might start small, but this is a five-year program. We really want to understand what your future needs are for load. Obviously, when we build out to your facility, we just really want to build out one time, as opposed to coming back. So the program EV Fleet supports from the transformer, which typically sits on a utility pole or it's on the ground, all the way to the charger. It does that in two ways. There's to the meter, which is the transformer, to the customer panel and switch gear. And then there's behind the meter, from that switch gear to the charger. So it's TTM, and BTN. PG&E will design, construct, own, and maintain to the meter, that to the meter piece, if it falls within the program cost parameters. If you qualify, PG&E will take that piece for you. Typically, behind the meter to the charger, the customer would do. They would build out, they would hire their own electrical engineer. And for that, we have incentives for the vehicle, and we also offer rebates for the chargers to help mitigate that behind the meter cost. So what we need from you to get started is your site plan. Where, what facility will you be domiciling those vehicles? Where will you be charging them on that facility? What OEM are you using? What type of vehicle? What type of chargers? We're looking at a five-year deployment schedule, so maybe this year or next year you have two buses or shuttles or delivery vans, and then the following year you might have three. So we really want to know what that deployment schedule is. And what is your anticipated load? I can tell you, we talk a lot about KW and KWH, and that can be confusing. We're here to help you manage that piece. If it's over 500 KW, it might take a little bit longer to construct because that would involve upgrading your transformer. But don't worry about that. You just figure out what you need to figure out as far as vehicles and chargers, and PG&E will help you consolidate that and build out your infrastructure. Here's a typical site. This is actually this building here. So if Tri called me and she said, "Ann, I want to have five buses across the street in that empty lot there," what I would do, and this is just simple Google, what I would do is go into our maps and see which transformers are located by that map, by that lot, what kind of load is currently on that transformer, and what type of load is it that you need. So here's a customer site. We see we have a transformer. I wonder if I have a little, I don't know. But anyway, in the beginning, in the right in the front of the building, that to the far right is that little green thing. That's the PG&E facility. That's a transformer. And this customer wanted their trucks in the green. They were having 10 trucks there. But what we found when we came out and did a site walk, that that would take 405 foot of underground trenching. That unfortunately would not qualify for the program. It would cost too much. So what we did is we worked with this customer, and they were willing to move their chargers and their trucks a little closer to the street, a little closer to the PG&E equipment, so they qualified for the program. And they still saved when they're behind the meter infrastructure because we're giving them incentives for each vehicle. This is our process, super easy. We make it very easy for you. Fill out an application online or give me a call. I am the cities and counties dedicated resource for the program. But before the application, you want to make sure which vehicles you're ordering, which charge vendors you're using, and what type of load you'll need. And then what we'll do is we'll do the load capacity check on the transformer. Then we'll actually come out to your site and do a physical site walk. It's very interesting when you do a physical site walk with our engineers to see where the PG&E facility and equipment is and where you're going to domicile your vehicles. And there's a lot of interaction and back and forth. Excuse me, we put cost to that, and then we get you approved for the program. And then, of course, we'll come out and construct. We do have an agreement to sign. Those T's and C's are on our website. And here's all kinds of information for you. Just click in. You can click in and find everything. The application. We do have a rebate calculator. If you want to go and put what type of vehicles you have, what loads you need, you can see what your monthly spending might be. And all kinds of information for customers. Thank you.
Just before Moses comes up, I want to remind everybody there's a Slido account if you want to upload your questions onto there. We'll use that for Q&A. So there, if you just log into slido.com, and then there's a code for it as well.
Good afternoon. I wanted to show this map to start off with because this is the challenges that we have in the rural areas. If you look at this map, it's of Fresno County, and it has all the incorporated cities and also the unincorporated communities, and I think that's very important from a holistic standpoint. If you look at the target markers there, it gives mileage at the top upper right-hand corners. They're kind of hard to see, but it'll give you an idea for the distance and the range. And that's very critical whenever you're going to plan your deployment for chargers and also the range of the type of vehicles that you're going to take on for your particular project, whether it's transit, whether it's a municipality, or other type of EV transportation. The services that we provide are very unique, and they serve those areas that we talked about. And for us, it's very important that we consider all of these factors, such as range and the locations. FCRTA does not own any real property. We're in the process of building a maintenance facility in Selma at approximately 10 acres. So we currently use all the 13 municipal public works yards in Fresno County. So it works out very well because we have a JPA with them. So it's very compatible, as we have existing CNG units there as well. This is our current fleet that we have, and if you look at this, I don't know how many of you know much about the different type of vehicles that are out there or what you're contemplating, but what we wanted to do is get a variety, a menu of different vehicles, and everybody asks why. Why not just buy one? Well, when you have a fleet of 110, you want to experiment on what you're allergic to. If you have peanut allergies or something to that effect, you don't want to go with something that you're allergic to. So what we decided to do was get a variety of vehicles. And if the one on the left there is a BYD bus, it's a 32-passenger bus. We eliminated the mid-rear door because in rural areas you don't want a mid-rear door because you're going to lose passengers and you really don't want to lose them out there. The Chevy Bolt is a three-passenger vehicle. However, it's not ADA compliant, so we have to have backup passenger ADA vehicles. The BYD, I may mention, too, is front kneeling, so it does have a ramp. And the next one is the Zenith van, and it's a nine-passenger with a wheelchair lift in the rear. And the Proterra is on the right. Some of you here may have seen them in Fresno because we do come into the courthouse to transfer and drop off passengers. It's a 40-foot Proterra bus, and it's 35-passenger with front kneeling as well. We wanted to show you the compatibility and really the type of chargers that these different vehicles use. And it's quite an education process for us because we're the first ones out of the gate. And sometimes that's not a good thing, but in hindsight, we think it is because it's going to give us a better opportunity to really make a formidable and informed decision based on engineering and practical sense of what type of buses that we're going to need and require and really what's best for us. So if you look at these different chargers, they have different platforms, different kilowatts. You've heard from the two other speakers here, the different kilowatts, kilowatt hours, and the type of levels, level one, two, and three, and the type of charging that it takes, whether it's the number of hours or the range. And as you can tell, they're all different. We really take pride in these solar arcs to the right. How many of you here have seen them in city halls or libraries here in Fresno County? Just by way of background, we were the first in the country to put in these solar arcs. They're level two, really more like level one, but they go by level two. We've put them in every city hall in the county of Fresno, with the exception of Clovis and Fresno. They're not in our jurisdiction. We serve rural areas. And we also have them in two libraries, one in Fowler and one behind Kingsburg, across from City Hall as well. And we really wanted to test the waters with these solar units because, one, they're low maintenance. They don't require any direct connections with wiring, and they're pretty much CEQA exempt. I don't know how many of you here are familiar with CEQA and permitting requirements, but you can pretty much get a DRA or overriding consideration, and they're basically CEQA exempt. So that helps in the permitting process as well, not that you would have any problems with them. And these are the chargers that are compatible to each of the units. If you look there for the Proterra, it's on a platform. It's more of a DC charger, as was alluded to earlier. The other one, the one in the middle, is for the Chevy Bolt. That's a typical one for your home unit. However, this one is a 240-volt one. And then the one on the right is for the BYD. So they come in various sizes, shapes, colors, everything else. And these are where the solar arc charging stations are located, as I mentioned earlier. The unit here on the bottom right is a solar tree. You've heard the and saw the solar arcs. This is a solar tree. This is 32 by 32, and we're going to be installing two of these, one in the city of Orange Cove and one in the city of Kalinga. And these are going to charge our 40-foot, 35-foot buses. These are level 3 chargers. That they can also be used for emergency backup charging in lieu of a charger that you would have in an emergency. And most charging units like that run on diesel, so it's kind of counterproductive to what we're trying to attain. And so we're in the process of designing the ground for these, getting the phase one, phase two, the soil compaction, and we should be in construction hopefully here in the next a month or two. It's quite a process, but we think it's well worth it, especially for the rural communities of Fresno County, and hopefully it'll take off as well. U.S. Navy uses these down in San Diego. They have several of these down there. Envision, the company name, is located down in San Diego, so obviously that's their home port, literally. And then there's a dealership in the city of Fremont, a Cadillac dealership. So if you're ever in those two areas, you may want to take a look at these. They're very massive. They provide a lot of shade. Some of the challenges and the installation constraints that we have here, I'm just going to go through them with you here. The juice boxes, they don't require a permit. They're pretty much easy installation. The Proterra has lower capacity but require concrete pads and underground lines, depending if you're adjacent in a public works yard. And I'm going to show you some pictures here in a minute with some of those trenches. Quite extensive. The BYD has higher amperage. And we do have to purchase transformers in addition to the chargers. So when you are considering the type of vehicle, ask for everything that's going to be required. Don't just take them at their word and say, oh, yeah, here you go. Here's a charger. Here's a vehicle. See ya. Have a nice day. You don't want that bumper-to-bumper warranty, whereas at the end of the you don't see that bumper anymore. There's no more warranty. So you really want to ask a lot of questions, and you want to do your due diligence, because you're going to get stuck with a lot of afterwork down the road. And we're learning the hard way. So, but in a way, it's good, because other people can learn from our oversight and our mistakes and kind of the first ones out. These are the hours that it takes for the installation. So depending on your engineer, your electrical contractor, you can multiply these hours times their hourly rate plus parts and other material that's necessary. And these are just averages. And this is pending no complications. And believe me, there are complications, there are situations, every single one. This is some of the construction work that you're going to be in for. And I'm not doing this to scare you. I'm just showing you an example of what you're in for. So do your homework and overplan as much as you can. Ask a lot of questions. Look at that trenching. Look at the cement pads. We're working in a very constrained area. You heard from the other speakers about logistics and so forth. This is very critical. And then you can see the upright location of these chargers and their proximity. And then this is our maintenance facility, where you see two different transformers, two different disconnect points down in the lower left, a lot of electrical, a lot of wiring, a lot of permitting, a lot of exposure, and a lot that can go wrong. Lessons learned. Basically, you need ongoing support from the vendor, and you really need to demand it and put it in writing if you have to. And also, the chargers have to be commissioned. By commissioning, they have to come out and actually do a lot of testing because of the electronics that are involved with the chargers. And this can be very tricky, so you really want the official blessing of them coming out with that Magnum champagne bottle and breaking it over the charger and giving you the green light to go. Also, the coordination with the utility companies. Fortunately, we have an electrical contractor that is very good, very experienced with that, and plus we work with our municipalities, which are part of our agency, so they're very good as well. And again, the infrastructure varies from site to site, so you have to be really careful with where you locate them, logistics. And planning is necessary for success, but expect the unexpected throughout this entire process. The charging technology is very challenging, the infrastructure and the electricity, the rates that were talked about earlier, and grid analysis planning project. I'm going to go through this very quickly, and then I'll end because I got the red light here and I don't want to get kicked out. We were fortunate to get a $515,000 grant from Caltrans. Thank you very much, Caltrans, State of California. This grid analysis is going to examine the entire grid system in Fresno County for all the incorporated cities and unincorporated communities. And with that, we hope to distribute it to all the public entities so that we can make some informed decisions as to, one, what's the existing capacity, in working with PG&E, which we did get a letter of support, as I indicated to Ann earlier, and also what the mitigation or improvements would be necessary, and lastly, what type of funding we're looking at to improve the grid system. You saw one of the earlier slides from Ann about the property line and outside the property and on property. Well, you have to determine what is going to be outside the property line for improvements as well, because you want to be a partner with the utility companies. You can't be a burden to them as well, and I think you'll get better cooperation from them as well. So we want to make this analysis available, and then it'll be a boilerplate for the entire state as well. Just ideal chain of events that you can look at here, if you have any other questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them. And I'm sorry for running over. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Moses. I know that I think everybody in the room certainly appreciates your willingness to really take a chance on the technology and be the pincushion, if I could put it that way. Certainly learning a lot of those lessons that you have been more than willing to share with the rest of us and partner with us, of course, as we continue to implement. So thank you very much. Okay, thank you to all the speakers. We're going to open it up now to questions for the panel. I believe that you guys can switch over to show what we're looking at on Slido here. We do have several questions. Some of them are to specific panelists, and I think a couple of them we can likely go in and even combine together. So, Moses, you had just started on yours, so why don't we run this one here together? One of the questions was, if you had to start your implementation again, what would you do differently? I personally think that the presentation that you gave really touched on the items that be aware of and whatnot, so I think that one was covered appropriately. But there's a good question here about how much is that solar tree and how much of a charge do you guys believe that it will produce?
Well, let me back up to that question. I just want to indicate that what I would recommend is that you, before you accept any vehicles or consider them, that you put in an infrastructure plan first, site location, and what type of infrastructure you're going to put in. That's a first. We did it just the opposite. We took the vehicles in and then worked backwards on it. So I would recommend that you develop an infrastructure plan, work with your utility company and your partners, no matter how good the grant is. Be sure that you develop an infrastructure plan and site location. That's number one. And that's what I would do differently. The solar tree, that's about a $430,000 tree and another $60,000 for installation. And we're getting two of those. And we were fortunate to get funding from Measure C through special, through the new tech grant application, as well as two new electric buses as well. And the charge that it can produce, it's a level three. It's not a DC charger, but it's a level three. So I would estimate that it could, depending on the battery level when you take it in to charge it, because it's all determined on other factors. So you're probably looking at a good 4 hours to charge it 80 to 100 miles. And remember, these vehicles, these buses, the range is 158 miles. We're getting 176-mile range based on driving conditions and other things. And I know this is about charging chargers and infrastructure, but there's another part to this about the drivers and other methods that you can use to maximize the mileage as well. So hopefully that answers your question.
I see that for sure with the difference in my driving style in our gas car between my wife and myself. I seem to get much better miles per gallon, so I would call that heavy-footed. I can say that because she's not here to shoot me a glare. Try to not text her. And I thought that this was a great question here, and I think it goes right along with one of the lessons learned that Moses had talked about. And the question there is, does PG&E currently have, or are they considering, a grid master plan for widespread electrification?
That is a great question. Our clean transportation and our grid innovations team are always looking at the grid overall. We do have a lot of renewables, 60% on the grid right now, solar, hydro, and wind. So we have a lot of energy capacity available. So for as far as a plan, I'm sure maybe down the road, proactively, most definitely, because this is where we're moving toward electric vehicles. As a matter of fact, people are saying your car will soon be your battery backup. Everything will be going through your car for your house. So we're getting ready for that future. Thank you.
Terrific. And then, Steve, I think if we could actually take a couple of the questions here and probably put them together for you. One of them here was, in your experience, what type of locations do you see the highest use of chargers? And then I would just add on to that one a secondary question that's actually asking about the life of the chargers themselves, and if that's anything that you have experience with, or have we had enough on the implementation side to see what seems to be the life cycle of a charger if located in an appropriate type of spot, in your experience or opinion?
So for the first one, I think it really depends on the kind of demographics and geographies. In some of the larger cities, we see workplace charging has become a really viable option because a lot of people who either live in multifamily homes and don't have a dedicated garage spot or park on the street. I mentioned specifically the hospital and municipal worker one. We really see workplace charging becoming pretty prominent because people do it every day and their cars sit there for 8 hours every day. So you can do some demand management with some smart charging and some things like that. So even in situations where people do show up at work at the same time, there's control systems where you can monitor their state of charge when they plug in and, sort of have a strategy around that. And that obviously is great for fleet vehicle deployments as well. On the charger infrastructure lifecycle, I haven't really seen any limitation other than just regular O&M on the connectors and things like that. People do not always take very good care of them. They, in certain weather conditions, can get brittle or break or things like that. But on the actual charger infrastructure itself, we kind of would treat that like any other, I come from a background where there's a lot of VFDs and variable speed drives and stuff like that. In a proper installation, the electronics are going to last 12 to 15 years.
Okay.
It's just the kind of beating that they take just because of their interface with the public.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Okay. Terrific. Let's see if there's any more here that branch off the other items. Similar to that one, Moses, this last one I think would be for you. So because the technology is so new, do we really have any indication yet on how many years or miles that the Bolts are the Chevy Bolts would be in service in order to be really, truly considered a viable fleet option?
Well, that's kind of a multifaceted question because as a public transit operator, you have to have ADA-compliant vehicles. Since Bolts are not ADA-compliant, meaning they don't have a wheelchair lift or a ramp or front kneeling or anything like that, we have to have a backup vehicle, a complementary paratransit vehicle. So we do have that, so we consider them as fleet, as viable because of the rural areas. The Chevy Bolts have a range of 248 miles, so we think that they cover a lot of distance. However, depending on the areas, the terrain that they're driving, it could make a difference. We plan to convert our fleet to probably 50 Bolts because we have new programs coming out that are going to be like the traditional Uber Lyft programs, and we're going to try these out in the rural areas. We're having a study done currently to make a determination on how we're going to deploy this using social service agencies in lieu of us as public operators using these Chevy Bolts so that we're not held by the constraints and regulatory factors of fare box recovery and some other regulations, and we'll be able to deploy these Bolts via social service agencies, private nonprofits, so that we can deal with those issues and still address those factors in rural Fresno County, because there is no existing Lyft or Uber available in Fresno County cities, rural cities, unless there's an existing Uber Lyft driver in one of those locations, and you happen to be in one of those locations, and you call, and they're there to get you into Fresno. So that's the factor that we're there. And we know it's here, and that's why we're studying it and looking at it. And we currently have 10 Chevy Bolts in the fleet, with another 4 to be picked up, hopefully, by this Friday. We plan to have 50, but we're en route, thanks to our friends at the Air District and also at the state with ARB and Batisma and Cal OES, some other funding sources as well.
Terrific. Thank you very much, Moses. So I think we'll go ahead and get started now with the second panel. Like, obviously, say thank you very much to our panelists from the first session here. Getting into the second one here, again, I'll go through the introductions of all three of the panelists together, and then we'll have them come up one by one. What we're going to be looking at here in panel number two is overcoming the hurdles of permitting, and this is some strategies for success. Now, this panel is going to review in detail what the new GoBiz charging station permitting guidebook says, the checklist and current regulations there are, including the City of Fresno streamlined permitting and a local perspective of getting through the permitting process, which we all know, those of us that either work for or interface with local agencies, can consistently be a stumbling block, right? Because there's a lot of moving pieces and a lot of different agencies that are involved in this. So to introduce our panelists, first we have Keelan Rothgen. Did I pronounce the last name appropriately?
It's Rathgen.
Rathgen. I knew.
I don't know where his heart
is. All right. But I got the first name right.
Oh, it's Kylan.
Oh, my goodness.
Almost the arm.
Kylan Rothgen.
Yes, yeah, Rathgen.
Rathgen. There we go. Thank you very much. He has spent the last 2.5 years focused on raising awareness for zero-emission vehicles and streamlining the development market, enabling infrastructure. He has a bachelor's degree in political science from UC Berkeley. He loves to travel. He loves the outdoors. And, of course, zero-emission vehicles. Yes, yeah, the Bears have done quite well recently. Yeah, absolutely. Of course, you're in Bulldog country. I mean, it's understood. But.
Don't worry, you got Bears support over here.
Yeah, it's good to know. Then, of course, we have the legend, Bonique Emerson. Bonique Emerson has 16 years of experience working as an urban planner, her master's degree in urban planning from UCLA, and she currently oversees the daily operations of the current planning division for the City of Fresno. Always a joy to work with and be around Bonique. All right, now, Ryan, I didn't get a chance to check on the pronunciation of your last name, so I'm going to hope that I get Ryan right.
I have faith in you.
Momini. Did I?
Yeah.
Okay, terrific. I only messed your stuff up. My apologies. So Ryan is the project developer of EV operations and manager for Turnkey Construction and Solar. He's been involved in the development of EV projects in the Central Valley and surrounding areas for almost a year and a half now. He's worked closely with multiple AHJs to begin streamlining the planning building review process for retrofit applications for electric vehicle infrastructure placement. So, Ryan, I think you're probably going to have a lot of good things to share with us, especially those of us that are with local agencies, to let us know where we might be missing the boat and where we can assist and make sure these things are getting better, put in place better. So, Kylan, we're going to get started with you. 15-minute time limit here. Again, watch out for the red smiley face, and we'll do questions with the entire panel after all three panelists have had a chance to come up.
That's great.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kylan Rathgen. My apologies for my complicated name. So I'm here from the Governor's Office of Business and Economic Development to talk to you about the electric vehicle charging station permitting guidebook. So A little background on this document is that this guidebook was created via an executive order from Governor Brown, in addition of getting 5 million electric or zero-emission vehicles on the road by 2030 and 250,000 charging stations by 2025. And the new administration has gone forward with continuing these goals to ensure that we have great air quality in California. So this is a great guide to be given to local governments and, you know, groups all over California that want to make it as easy as possible to get this infrastructure in the ground so we get as far as we can for every dollar we put in the EV infrastructure. So for starters, I'm going to go on a brief overview of the guidebook. And if anyone wants a copy of this, it's available online. You can just type in electric vehicle charging station permitting guidebook into Google, or you can go to the GoBiz website, and it's available. And we encourage you to spread this as far as you can. So in regards to the guidebook, we're going to go over some brief sections. So first, planning and site selection, so how to, best determine where to get install the infrastructure, and then specifically permitting. This is really the heart and soul of our guidebook, specifically AB 1236, which is the state of California streamlining law, which says that every city and county in California has to streamline their permitting process. And what we've seen through working with local governments and county governments is that many governments have not done this yet. So we're wanting to, provide you with best examples and tools to, get this process in place in your cities. Third, we speak about accessibility. This is a big piece to putting in charging infrastructure in California, and we go into a lot of detail about why it was created and many of the details. Fourth, we talk about the interconnection process and working with utilities. And fifth, construction, commissioning, and operation. So for starters, planning and site selection. So we spend a lot of time talking about voluntary building codes. So the state has done a lot regarding creating building code requirements for EV-capable charging spots. So 10% as a baseline of multi-family dwelling parking spots need to be EV-capable by 2020. So that's a great baseline that we've set for apartments, but we want to take it one step forward, the so-called REACH codes. So we're encouraging cities and counties to take that one step further to make it increase the requirements for buildings to install as many charging stations as you can per parking unit. We also go into detail about parking and charging clarifications. One of the big challenges cities and counties have is that if there's a particular parking number requirement, it's hard to get your permit for a charging station. But AB 1236 stipulates that the only reason to get a permit for a charging station is dependent on health and safety. So your parking counts should not count to getting infrastructure in the ground. We also go into detail about whether a charging spot counts as a parking spot. So the Sacramento County has a great standard of if you install a EV-capable parking spot, it counts as two parking spots. So one EV charger counts as two spots. So this is a great way so you get as much bang for your buck if you put in a charging station. So we're encouraging cities and counties to adopt similar measures throughout California. Lastly, we also talk about climate action plans so that for any city or county that's thinking about air quality and sustainability to have a infrastructure component of an EV infrastructure component of your planning. A second, we talk about the permitting process. So again, AB 1236 is really the heart and soul of what California needs to look to get streamlined. So the way this works is a city or county needs to pass an ordinance. So a law from the city saying we're going to streamline our process. So that means you have a checklist of what a EV developer needs to get their permit and an online application. So all that's available online. And then once a developer puts that in, it goes through the submittal process and then review is focused primarily on the building department. And we're really trying to drive this point home is that there's only one deficiency notice. So if you're having a problem with your permit, all of the problems are bundled together so that the charging developer can address them all instead of having multiple problems come in, which delays the process significantly. So then you go through resubmittal, and then you get approval to build. And then this process should be as streamlined and fast as possible so we can get as much infrastructure in the ground as we can. So to document this process, the Governor's Office of Business and Economic Development has created a great mapping tool which compiles all of the permitting information, the checklist, the ordinance for every city and county in California. So here's a snapshot of what we have so far. This is a brand new tool we've created, so most of the state is gray. But green essentially means you're good to go with your permitting, you're streamlined. Yellow means you have some of what AB 1236 speaks of, and red means you have not streamlined your permitting process. So we're also looking for local partners to help us fill in this map. So if any of you are interested in helping us fill in the Central Valley, we'd love to speak with you. So here's an example of what we have in Fresno County. So most of it is gray. And Fresno County, which Monique's going to speak about later, has done a great job of working to streamline the process. So I know that's in the works right now. But essentially, if you click on any city or county in California, it will go over all of the details of what you need. So an ordinance, a checklist, and then whether or not, you know, there's an e-signature, whether or not there's mention of one deficiency notice in the ordinance. All of that information that you need to be AB 1236 compliant, we outline it for every city or county, and you can go online to our website down here at the EV readiness link right here to see how your city or county is doing. So in terms of how we evaluate every city or county, first and foremost, you need that ordinance to say you're streamlining your process. Second, you need a checklist that's available online that says what a city or county might need. Third, you have an administrative approval process of your charging. You know, it's funneled, again, through the building department. And fourth, which is, you know, very important, which we see slowing permitting throughout California, is that the review is limited just to health and safety review and does not get caught up in a parking or aesthetic review. It's just about health and safety. Fifth, we have electronic submittal of your permit. Sixth is that your permit is not subject to association approval. So like a condo board, they shouldn't be able to veto a permit. And then seventh, which I spoke about earlier, it's all about that one deficiency notice, which combines all the problems you might have in a permit. And eighth, which is not in law, but we're trying to drive home the point that cities and counties should have timelines set up to get this process, you know, to get the infrastructure in the ground. So you get an eighth bonus point if you have in your ordinance, you know, a timeline of saying it takes 30 days for your application to be processed. In terms of timelines, we have we surveyed the industry, and again, this is not in statute, but of what is what we're looking for in regards to timelines. So to have your application submittal, the complete response should take, you know, 5 days for a DC fast charger. Obviously, it takes longer in certain situations, but we understand 5 days is really a great standard to go for looking at the EV charging industry. From complete package to approval to build, it should take around 15 days for DC fast charge, and then from complete construction notice to inspection should take about 5 days. So this is a goal, you know, obviously it could take longer, but we're seeing in California, we're spending a lot of money on infrastructure and it can take upwards of 300 days. So we want to make sure that this is as fast as possible. And we're just creating this as a great standard going forward. Finally, we also talk about accessibility. So California is the first state in the nation to specify ADA compliance rules. So we go into a lot of detail of why that was created and also talk about what ADA space requirements you're looking at depending on how many chargers you have. So we have a table right here that goes over how many spaces you need. It just goes into a lot of detail. But again, we really want to drive home the point that if you want to, make this as easy as possible, we recommend you talk to the Division of State Architect because we want to make sure that, you know, site host, you know, local government isn't being sued under the ADA. So the Division of State Architect has developed the regulations for the ADA so they can walk you through a code path which is legally defensible. So this is your one-stop shop if you're having any problems with getting through the ADA process in your city or county. We also speak about connection to the grid. We go into a lot of detail about the five biggest utilities in California and how to work with their interconnection teams. I know we have the great folks from PG&E here. You can, you know, talk to them, but just what's the best way to go about working with the utilities, which is, you know, working with them as soon as possible. The second you want to put in a charger, talk to your utility. And then if you want to see some great photos, this is the best part of the guidebook. We have a lot of great trenching photos of putting the chargers in the ground. And we talk a lot about the pending weights and measure certification by the Division of Measurement and Standards. That's a regulation about ensuring that you get exactly what you pay for with that charger. And there's a regulation going into effect hopefully in 2020. So we speak about that, and we also talk about signage requirements. You can get a free sign from Caltrans if your charging is available all throughout the day. So this is a very lightning fast overview of our 65-page guidebook. We encourage you all to check it out. And again, my name is Kylan Rathjen, and Tyson Eckerly, who's the leader of our unit at the governor's office that's working on making EV infrastructure as accessible as possible throughout California. So we're looking for partners, and we want to help you as much as we can to make the state achieve its clean air goal. So thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to working with you all in the future.
Thank you very much, Kylan. Appreciate it. I'm going to have an opportunity here now from Boni to talk about some local implementation and some best practices here in the city of Fresno.
Okay, I'm going to focus on what the city of Fresno went through in order to streamline the EV charging permitting process. And I'm going to focus on the planning process, because really that's where we heard there were delays. It was the planning process, not really in the building permitting process. So we received feedback that the planning process was overly cumbersome, and this was about a year ago. So what we did is we created a handout to help simplify the process, and this is what our handout looked like. It just was a checklist and some examples of what we wanted to see on the site plan. We made it one page, tried to make it very simple, and people could go through and check off and make sure that they had submitted a complete application. But this wasn't enough. We still had issues. So in April of this year, we followed up with a more complete checklist to help streamline the process. And here's what that checklist looked like. Again, we tried to go through and be very clear on what the submittal requirements were, how to submit your application, had instructions, but it also still wasn't enough. We're still having a lot of issues with the submittals received from applicants. As mentioned before, there were still a lot of site plan and parking lot design issues. So even with the handout and the checklist, the majority of submittals still had issues. And here's an example of a site plan that's redlined. The sites were consistently not in compliance with the City of Fresno parking manual. And what happened was it resulted in resubmittals and delays to project approval. So what we did is we decided to take planning and traffic review out of the equation. It did take a lot of collaboration with several departments, specifically planning and public works, building and safety, to work through a streamlined process. And what we decided on was a self-certification process that would allow projects to move straight to building permits without planning review. And so I have our process here, and actually it changed a little bit. We made this public and available to utilize at the beginning of the month, and we have had several submittals. And so what we did is we gathered the process that we go through, an applicant goes through, is they just give us the basic information, and then there's certain criteria that have to be met in order to use the streamlined process. So our goal is that about 90% of the EV charging proposals will be able to use this streamlined process, but there will be about 10% that will still have to go through our normal process, and those are just sites that are unique. But again, we try to really capture the majority of what we were seeing. And our checklist has applicants just go through and self-certify that they're meeting certain requirements. And we created a lot of examples of what we wanted to see. And then we also have an example site plan. And so after they go through this form, they attest that they're doing exactly what we're asking for. They simply sign and date. And they either submit this online, or they could bring it to our planning front counter. And the planners look through it, make sure that they've just filled out everything, initialed everything, and we stamp okay to submit to building and safety, and they completely bypass the planning process. So this is actually something that, I met with someone at the counter the other day, an applicant who had some problems going through the process before, and he said, this is just so great. He doesn't have to go through the planning process now. So, you know, we've heard from the industry and also from staff because, you know, we really don't want to delay projects, and we don't want to have this back and forth on small details. So instead of doing that now, we put it in the hands. We give everything to the applicant and let them, you know, make sure and be diligent and make sure that they're complying with everything. And as long as they attest that they're doing what they need to do, then we stay out of the process. Oops. And I know I didn't have a 15-minute presentation, but I'll answer questions when we're done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bonnie. Appreciate it. So, Ryan, excited to hear from you. I think a lot of the challenges, the organizations are actually working to put these items in the ground. Type of things like what Bonique had just talked about, you know, what type of difference can that end up making for you guys compared to the experiences that you've had up to this point?
Absolutely. And so I'm going to start off saying thanks for having me. Thanks for having a local construction company who is actively out there trying to fight through all the restrictions that we're meeting on today to be able to have our voice heard. Thanks, Trey, for inviting us, and thank all you guys for collaborating on making this streamline and get California EV infrastructure in the ground. So I don't have a fancy PowerPoint like everybody else, and I apologize for that, but most of my stuff is verbally communicated anyway, and it's just my hurdles that I've jumped over. I say I and my turnkey construction. The hurdles that we've jumped through and jumped over and crawled under and dug through and you know, so on and so forth to get to where we're at now. And as a company that's really taken on EV installation as a number one primary business model, I can tell you that meetings like this make it accessible for us to continue to do that and really push the strive for the Central Valley as our main focus to get EV chargers in the ground. So basically, from the local perspective, on the other side of the fence, the main holdup has been permitting and planning, planning review, traffic review, and the scrutinization that comes along with it. When we first started, Bonique mentioned that a year ago someone was in there complaining about the planning and traffic process being too long. Guilty. Sorry. You know, try to do it in a professional way and try to sit down and have a meeting with the planning and traffic supervisors, with the engineering supervisors, with the electrical back check, Jan Beer, the city architect planning review, and really just trying to get an idea of a collaboration on how it works for both of you guys. So how can we comply with what you're looking for as far as health and safety review? But then how do we implement these chargers in Fresno when it's hard enough to get Fresnans to buy off on chargers in general? And so one of the barriers of entry for chargers for us is timeline. And timeline, like Bonique mentioned, planning and traffic reviewed, their timeline for review is between 4 and 8 weeks. And if they had comments, then I had to go back, redo the site plan, redo whatever they asked me to change, then go back and submit it, and again fell back into most of the time a 4-week review on a back check comment. So now we're at 12 weeks just in the initial review process. From then, I get the approval or I go set up a back check appointment and sit there for, you know, an hour or two or however long it takes to you know, work through the problems, get it signed off, and then go take it to building. And then have building look at it for 4 to 8 weeks, which, you know, Bonnie kind of touched on, wasn't really the problem. Building is pretty straightforward. They're looking at electrical. They're looking at accessibility, and that's kind of it. It kind of went through a little wishy-washy area where they thought that it needed to go to grading for accessibility stuff, which we're not changing grade in 98% of what we're trying to do, trying to put these chargers in a place so we don't have to completely tear up a parking lot to restructure the accessibility or path of travel, stuff like that. So when we're trying to retro these jobs into an existing parking lot, The biggest hurdle, I guess, we have now that we've kind of gotten through Fresno City's issue a little bit with planning and traffic is just accessibility and the cost that goes into it. And so to try and bring up a site, depending on whether it's Fresno City or another HA, because we handle multiple HAs surrounding Fresno City, is some of them interpret the rules of scope of work as we need to upgrade the entire site to be accessible. And we need to provide a path of travel from the main building to the main parking lot, plus ours, and plus this, and plus that, and that. I mean, we've had a couple MUDs that have backed off because they were built way long ago, and they're not accessible. And so we're like, okay, well, if you want us to do all of it, I mean, we're throwing out astronomical numbers. And then they're, you know what, let's hold off for now. So accessibility is kind of an issue, but we've worked around that. You know, it's take 15, 16 months of me beating my head against the wall to really figure out what everybody wants, which I still haven't really done because every AHA interprets Cal Green and permitting guidelines and AB 1236 a little differently, right? And so nobody's really adopted the exact streamline that you can go into any jurisdiction in California with this, and here's my packet of EV, and have it go through without getting held up in some way or another. So I guess from the local standpoint, we're taking strides to do so. It's just getting the AHAs to adopt. And whether it's, you know, having specific AHA meetings with, you know, people like the governor's office or the CEC. Brian's been awesome with working with us with incentives and whatnot. Dante and his team, Matt, and Peter at the air district have been awesome as well as far as incentives go. Permitting, I guess, it comes back to our biggest hurdle that we're still trying to get through. And they have implemented some streamlined process. But it, from a local, you know, we can always ask for more, ask for more, ask for more. So I could ask for more, and I could, you know, hey, can we do this and can we do that? We've taken strides in Fresno City, or they have, I guess, not we. They've taken leaps and bounds to get to where they're at now, which is greatly appreciated, again, as being a business that's trying to make this our business model. So being able to get through a permit process with, you know, in under 2 months and creating the job flow from point of sale to actual install. Like I said, I touched base earlier, Fresno's, it's hard to even sell them chargers at this point. Nobody's buying off on it. Why do I need 10? Why do I need even 2? Nobody drives it. Let's put them in the back over there. Let's put them behind Target. You know, and it's just like, well, if we put them over there, now we have to trench through your parking lot. We have to cut up this asphalt. If you want to utilize incentives, then we're doing a prevailing wage. Now we're throwing out, again, a number that you can't swallow. And now we're to the point at ground zero where, you know what, let's back off. So that's kind of our biggest issue is timeline. And permitting has gotten better. But even at the same time, without trying to throw names or, you know, throw shade or anybody, you know, there are other jurisdictions, not Fresno City, that they have a streamlined process that I can go in and hand them my plan and get a call in literally 5 business days that my plan's ready for pickup, here's your permit, and there's no need to self-certify that this site is up to the code that they signed off on 10 years ago and stuff like that. So it's just kind of a game. Fresno obviously wants to make sure they're doing their best to make sure that we are complying with health and safety issues, but at the same time is inhibiting our issue or our problem or inhibiting us from putting in chargers. So again, I keep circling back the same thing, but timeline is our biggest barrier of entry for chargers in Fresno. And we do appreciate everything that Fresno City has done. I've talked with Luis and Leonor and Jan and Gus and all the planners and and everybody that I could, and everybody's on board for it. It's just the consensus when you try and get all of the lawmakers and all of the people who actually put things into place to get them on board with what the public is, you know, screaming at the counter. And I know I've been down there and listening to, you know, contractors or clients, the way they talk to the public counter is insane. It's awful. So not only do you need to create a relationship, but, you know, to be able to sit down and have a personable experience with your AHJ and talk about what you're trying to do and ways that we can work around it and just full understanding of Cal Green and the way that you can work around things to make it work for the client, because the end result is we all want this to go in for us and for our clients in general. So the main goal is the same. So how do we get there and both feel like we accomplished what we were looking to accomplish is our big goal. So I don't want to keep repeating myself, but timeline is huge. So that's really all I have. Like I said, Fresno's been amazing lately and the adoptions that they have tried to do. But, you know, we can be better as a contractor as well. I know that, you know, some of our wounds are self-inflicted as far as what we submit for a review. So we've tried to take strides to be better, and we appreciate the strides that other AHJs have taken to be better for us to congruently be better for the end goal, which is the local community. So thanks, guys.
Thank you very much, Ryan. So I think what we took from that one is timeline is important, and it's the planner's fault. That's certainly, that's what, which I think we already do, Brad. It's always the planning department's fault. No, honestly, I think you touched on some really important items there, and I do think that so much of it ends up simply being about communication and relationships and people really being able to come onto the same page with what they're trying to do. And a lot of times things that are very well-intentioned can get in the way of that, so how do we find ways to make sure that we're navigating through that in a way that the items are going to be efficient and they're going to be effective, we're going to get things done, we're also going to be able to do it in a way that's accountable to our public, right? So that's the goal, obviously, why we're all here today. So, you know, we have about 15 minutes, almost 20 minutes here for questions, so we could probably get through the few questions that we have on Slido and then also even go out to the audience with the, who has, somebody have the mic?
Yeah, we'll just step up to that very corner mic right there.
Okay, perfect. So, yeah, let's go ahead and get started with some of those that they had on Slido. So, to get started, I'd be really interested to know, so, Monique, for the city of Fresno, have you guys seen an increase in the number of applicants that are coming in for EV charging infrastructure, either go up or down? And do you think that that is in any way a direct response to how you guys are trying to implement an easier process?
So we just implemented this, I think it was 3 weeks ago, and so we haven't really sent out a mass email or anything to let people know, so we're going to work on that to let all of the applicants who've submitted in the past know about this new process. We have received, I think I looked at it, 5 applications since we've implemented, and like I said, I did
6 as of this morning?
No, I did 6 in a group. Oh, those are my 6.
Okay, then. Yeah, so we probably have around 10 because I worked with another applicant too from another company. And so, like I said, I had the conversation with him just very briefly, and he was actually going through the form and filling it out. And he's just, this is so great. I know it does put a little bit of responsibility and liability on applicants, so that's a little, but you know, the trade off is that it's a really easy process. I mean, all we do is we make sure all the signatures are there, and we sign it off, and so we're hoping that it does increase applications in the future, knowing, I think, you know, now that you have to go to plant, through planning, it's probably like, yes. So we're hoping to see an increase.
So you may not have seen it yet, but you truly anticipate seeing much more of a positive. People that maybe would have said, not really interested in that process, now all of a sudden it becomes much more viable.
Yeah, we were working on this for about, I would say, about 2 months, and so people knew about it, and during that time we did have, people were kind of holding back.
Okay.
So I know this other person was holding back and waiting for this streamlined process, and so now that it's out there, we've had a few more come in.
Well, good. Cool. I'd love to. Hopefully we all get to hear in the future, like, wow, that was, one of the magic pill items that really helped implement some of this here. So, terrific. That's very good to hear.
Rob, just a reminder to turn on your mic because we are recording.
Oh, I don't speak loud enough for it to be picked up on all the other mics?
No.
Okay, sorry about that. Ryan, what would you say the challenges, are they larger for retrofitting items in existing parking lots or new construction type of items, or the challenges similar on either side simply because of some of the permitting and review timeline related issues that there's been?
I would say definitely bigger challenges on the retrofit applications. with a new construction type of parking lot or parking structure building that has a parking lot, usually you just, if you can get in with the client at the time of planning or the time of, you know, building the plan out and talking and going through the site plan revisions and stuff like that, if you can point out the exact regulations and requirements that Fresno City is looking for, just because we are in Fresno City now. So if you can point them in the direction and, you know, hey, we need a path of travel behind this. You can't have it in front of this because it's a tripping hazard. You have to allow for a van accessible, which can go here, which needs to be 12 foot wide, and the loading zone, and this, and the, that, and the other. It gets worked into the plans, and it goes through, and the EV portion of a new plan set has not been the issue. It's going into a retrofit application where, you know, we're starting to take on some projects for the city of Fresno, actually. And a lot of the properties that we're going to are older, or old parking garages, things of that nature. And so it's hard to take an old site that may not even be up to, you know, for example, accessibility. Right, may not be up to current code then, just because it's old, kind of forgotten about, or it's good enough for now. And then we go in and we're trying to deploy chargers. And if there's not already a path of travel that it's spelled out, or you know, what have you, then now we're coming into pretty much a complete halt. That if I can't provide an accessible charger, well then we can't do them here. Well, you know, there is some workaround, and Cal Green points out some, you know, percentages on what they can and can't force you to do as far as accessibility, and there are some exemptions and things along that nature. So just getting HJs familiar with Cal Green and the workarounds that there are to be able to deploy as many as we can.
Okay. Yeah, do you run into issues too with retrofit, where just a build off of that question, where, you know, a lot of times if you have something that is now out of compliance with the current building code, and if you make any amendments to that, now you got to become into complete compliance.
Right.
So is that part of the challenge as well?
Yeah, and that's what I kind of touched on. You know, with the MUD in other jurisdictions, we haven't had one in Fresno happen, but, you know, we were looking at one in the Sacramento area that was an older MUD, and there was literally no walkways in the whole thing. You know, so there's no walkway in front of the parking stalls that lead up to any buildings, no common walking way at all. And so that was a challenge for us. We didn't have accessibility. We could provide a loading zone all day long, but we couldn't provide a ramp to get to any specific building without revamping the entire site.
Yeah.
So that is an issue for us. And then again, with retrofit, it's just trying to comply with the site plan the way the AHA wants to see it, as well as trying to find power on that site. So retro is the hardest to do when you're trying to come out of the middle of a building, you know, a three-story office building. The electrical room is dead center in that building. It's all built out, and then it's glass on the outside to be, you know, to throw it on top of it. So now we can't even run above T-bar to come outside, and now we're trying to, you know, to fit charges into a building that we just can't access the electrical room. Which is then when we go to PG&E and ask them for, you know, a new service drop if it's applicable. If the transformer already is serving a building at 2,000 amps, then I've been told we can't add a new service drop. Mm-hmm. You know, things of that nature. So a retro is definitely the bigger challenge in EV. It's so much better to do even just the infrastructure if we're building right now. You know, just the infrastructure to actually have it done the right way as well. Because, you know, recently in Clovis comes to mind, we had a project in Clovis that's a building was built literally 3 months ago. Says that there is conduit to this location in the parking lot. I went out and looked at it. There's absolutely no conduit in the parking lot. There's two breaker spaces allocated for future EV, but there's no conduit.
No piping running to it, yeah.
You know, and so it's like, okay, well, there's definitely space electrically. How do I get here now? And now I'm tearing up a three-month-old parking lot that just got, you know, sealed and coated and all of that, and I have to go tell the client, hey, I got to cut this up. Alter the project.
Yep.
So just the understanding, even if we're not involved up front, if we're building new construction, to have the inspectors, I guess, and then the building inspector plan checkers understanding that there needs to be conduit. If we're talking about EV infrastructure, it needs to go to where it's actually saying.
So new construction, really making sure that you're setting that up and you're being prepared for that to then make retrofits more plausible in the future. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. I'd like to add something from the utility perspective. I know you only deal with PG&E, but at SCE, we do accommodate additional points of service for otherwise applicable rates. Whereas you have a general service rate in a building, if you have an EV rate, they will accommodate a new point of service, at least from an SCE perspective. And I believe PG&E would align on that as well. So that should help alleviate things.
Yeah, we've had PG&E look into it a few times. Again, the famous word for me today is going to be timeline. And even if we do reach out to PG&E for an added service for added load for EV, the timeline to engineer and come up with a actual monetary value on that to be able to pass that to the client, or you know if we're going to eat that, to be able to give them solid answers. By the time we're able to tell them, yes, we can get a service drop, it's going to be here and it'll cost us this much, the interest on the project is kind of waned away. So
I didn't say it would be easy.
I only said it would be worth it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, Keelan, I think that there's several follow-up questions that probably come along with that, too, that tie into some of the questions that we have here as well. And that, you know, working in a local planning department myself, there's a lot of stuff now on the solar side where the state has just absolutely given, I'll use exemption as a very broad term. I know that that has some legal ramifications to it, so I don't mean it that way. But ways that the state has just said, we're going to make sure that permitting for that is required to be significantly easier. And some of those things are welcomed by local agencies. Some of them are a complete nightmare for local agencies to deal with, but that's life and you deal with it. I'm interested to know if some of those items, if the state is looking at taking a similar type of angle toward EV infrastructure and the placement of that type of infrastructure, whereas now you can have someone come in and submit for, you know, a solar on their single-family home, and there's a very specific set of criteria and things that need to be turned around very quickly and a lot of things that are just really exempt for them to be able to do that. Is it a similar angle that we're going to see through AB 1236 implementation, and if that is the case, how exactly is the state working to make sure that that's being communicated to the local agencies that actually deal with the permitting, which seems is obviously where the rubber's hitting the road and some of the complications are happening?
Sure, yeah. So that's, yeah, great question. So, yeah, we see throughout all the cities in California is that staffing always tends to be a very large issue. You know, there's so many things to be permitted. This often won't get the priority it deserves. So we're trying to reinforce this point with, you know, this roadshow we're doing now with our permitting guidebook and with our map to really drive home the point that this is a priority of the state and something that, you know, we want to work on. So I know the questions are talking about, like, when is the map going to be completed? So we're trying to utilize local partners more and more to kind of spread the word about this program. Because ultimately, if you streamline your permitting process, it frees up cities to have more time to work on other initiatives, which we think is great. So by streamlining your permitting, it makes everything much easier. So, you know, we're working with local groups and other state agencies are really driving home this point about the importance of creating a streamlined process. So I know AB 1236, one of its deficiencies is that it doesn't have teeth or anything to make cities comply with the process. The dates to streamline your process have now since passed. So we're trying to work with the existing law now to just work with folks and, you know, provide best practices, show that cities are actually getting more investment, more money from these charging companies are going into your cities. If you streamline your process, it means, you know, you're open for business. So there's a lot of alignment with environmentalist groups, with folks that want to, you know, generate jobs and communities, especially with the clean energy economy. So we see a lot of overlap with streamlining this process and, you know, just working with all the folks we can. But ultimately, if you streamline, it makes, you know, it easier to get dollars in your communities and also lets you comply with, you know, air quality, objective. So, you know, we're happy to work with anyone here in the room and provide best practices. And again, encourage you to go to our guidebook where we've really surveyed the industry, best local governments all over California, and compiled that together to make it as easy as possible so that you're not solving the challenges that have already been solved by the city down the road.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Thank you very much. I'd be interested to know, or to see, I guess I should say. I'm sure that that map isn't intended to just be like a snapshot in time. I'm sure you guys want it to continue to grow and evolve. So it'll be interesting to see over time how that works and how more and more agencies and areas of the state come up with these streamlining processes and how other agencies can utilize their best practices and their examples there for use.
And to show how the Governor's Office of Business and Economic Development cares about this issue is that we've doubled our staff capacity in the last month to work on this issue specifically so that we can outreach to more communities and also work more aggressively at developing our brand new tool, this streamlining map.
Oh, that's great to know. Yeah, that's good to know that there will be the resources there when you call, that you'll have the technical assistance needed. So when you reach out to them, terrific. So we had one question here, Bonique. This one's for you, asking about the public charging stations in current parking lots within the city of Fresno. Are those specifically just city-owned parking lots, or is there a concentration right now on going with city-owned lots and private lots right now, or have you noticed?
So we have. Are you talking about applications that we've seen? There's been a mix. I think you mentioned that you're working on some City of Fresno projects, so there are some City of Fresno projects in process, but in the past we've seen a lot in private parking lots. So offices, retail, a variety, but majority in the past have been on private property.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, we've seen interest for similar type of stuff in my local agency. And I know the next panel is really going to be able to touch on, okay, like who pays for it, right? And that actually ends up being, in addition to the permitting challenges and the streamlining items that may or may not already be in place, the fact of, they're actually pretty easy to pay for, to get the infrastructure itself, to pay for that. But then who pays for the actual energy moving forward? How does that work? Is it for-profit? Is it non-profit? Is it, run through a special district? How do you do that? That seems to be, there's a lot of questions about that. So I'd be interested to talk about that one in the next one there. Let's see. We just got a new one that came up here. And that's good. I was going to ask about this one, too, because it had to do with GoBiz. So does the GoBiz address utility providers, and or is there any legislation currently or being proposed that requires a streamlined process for the utility providers? And that was going to be the other question, Keelan, I think that I was going to have for you. It seems like there's a lot of the best practice stuff going toward the local agencies. But then, as often is the case, of course, when you have utility service providers, they also have a plethora of items that they have to address. So what's been the conversations with them and any processes that the state has been trying to work on with the utility service providers to ensure that they also have capacity and a process to then be able to link better with the local agencies to actually provide these items?
Well, I know the PUC has done a lot of great work with utilities in California to encourage, greater deployment of EV infrastructure in the ground. For that particular question, I'm not sure if any effort exists. I don't know if Brian on the other panel, if you know of any efforts that exist right now, but I know that's something being discussed. But what we're doing right now is really trying to use the existing laws, because we believe there's a powerful infrastructure, powerful legal kind of infrastructure in place that we can use to, what we already have to streamline the state. So we're trying to do outreach, work with communities instead of having to pass new laws right now. But we know the legislature and, other legal bodies will move forward into the future. But we're trying to just work with what we have right now to streamline the state.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear some feedback if you have.
Yeah, I can speak to that. I'm sorry. Microphones are my absolute bugaboo. I don't know why. I can't figure them out for the life of me. So from a utility perspective, we have, obviously, you'll see in my presentation and in Ann's, we have quite a bit of money earmarked toward infrastructure deployment. And the way utilities work in the state of California, we make money on infrastructure. So it's incumbent upon us to get that infrastructure in the ground as quickly as possible, because we're allowed to make a return on our infrastructure. So it behooves us to expedite this. And I could tell you, as an agent of the utility, as boots on the ground, Nikes on the ground, that we are staffed to the gills for this sort of stuff. And we move quickly and we move aggressively on moving these projects along. So that's the Edison perspective.
Ah, terrific. That's great to hear. Good feedback. I think the two of the other questions were up here I think could really be put together. And that's, the first one is, are there available options for the smaller mom and pop or the local businesses in order to encourage them to provide EV charging options? And then I would even branch off of that one. The last question that just came in was about the permitting process in the unincorporated areas with the County of Fresno for installing public charging stations. To me, those are very similar type of questions. Obviously, the ones in Fresno County would go through the county's process there. But what are some of the state incentives? I know there's a ton of them. I mean, really, page after page. But what are some of the ones that you guys as the professionals see as being most effective or most utilized or understood as far as those that can really help people and encourage them to want to place EV infrastructure on their site? That's open to anybody.
So we pay for the infrastructure on Charge Ready, turnkey, top to bottom, in front of and behind the meter, all the way to the stub outs to the charging stations, and then we rebate charging stations in some of our programs, which I'll get into in my presentation. But to my experience, that I think the biggest barrier to entry is the infrastructure piece. Mm-hmm. EVs are increasingly subsidized, and charging stations are relatively inexpensive in the scheme of everything. But the infrastructure side of things is the big hang up with a lot of folks. And the fact that SCE and the rate base at large is funding that is really helpful.
Okay, terrific.
So after we get back from our break, I'll talk about our $51 million we have available in the state. That number will jump to $71 million by the end of the year and over $130 or $160 million by the end of next year. So stay tuned.
That was a great lead-in before the break. I like that. Absolutely. I like that.
I work with Brian and Cali VIP for a lot of our projects, as well as local air pollution control districts. So we usually have grant funding available. So when you couple both of those, especially in Fresno County, you know there's ample funds available to build out.
Okay. And then one of the other questions, Ryan, while you're there, what are some of the vendors or charge providers that you guys work with? And then for turnkey specifically, do you guys do business and private, or is it just business only?
So we do both. Primarily, our business model is my main project is commercial. So businesses, but we do private residences. We usually don't have a lot of people reach out to us directly just for a residential EV charger. But what happens is, because we do offer solar as well, it's our business model number two, or one, however you want to put it. Whoever you're talking to will tell you one or the other. obviously, for me, EV is number one. When we do residential solar, if our client asks for it or they drive an EV, then we end up installing home chargers for them as well. As far as vendors that we work with, we partner with ChargePoint. So our number one and only charger that we have deployed to this point has been ChargePoint, which Doug at the end of the table has been an awesome rep for them, works with us very well. We went with them because to us they are cream of the crop, top of the line charger, and that's the kind of clients that we tend to deal with. So our business owners, business developers, project developers, stuff like that, our apartment complex managers, property managers and owners, when we come to them with the amount of customization and different things that the charger can do, that's, we vetted a few, and that's who we deal with primarily.
Okay, that's good feedback. I know at my house I actually have a charge point, and that's what we elected to go with it at our home. I think, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a lot more in the next panel, but you know, when we first started looking into EV on the personal side, there was the discussions of, you know, the significant amount of dollars that you would need to put into it, into the infrastructure in your own home to be able to make it a viable option. And that's even if, you know, on the other end, getting to work and all of that, if that was going to work as well. The fact is, if you just kind of run the numbers on how much you spend in gasoline on any given year and just say, well, I'm going to spend a couple months of that up front, but then I'm not going to have that cost anymore. For us personally, it ended up being a absolutely break-even point pretty soon, and then in the green from then on out. So, I think it's a great thing, and excited to see it continue to roll out. on a regional level. I think what we'll do at this point is we'll just go ahead and break a few minutes early. We'll take about a 10-minute break. Keep in mind that there is some light refreshments and snacks on the back tables, and we will resume in between 3:20 and 3:25. Try, does that work for you? Terrific. Thank you.